Hello and welcome to Brain Injury Bites, where we provide help and advice for people after a brain injury. Hi, I'm Ashwani and I'm a trustee at Headway Warrington. I'm also a senior associate solicitor focusing on catastrophic injury, including brain injury.
My name's Brooke and I've lived with a traumatic brain injury since 2007.
Thank you for returning to listen to part two of this interview. What I wanted to ask was in relation to oversight over deputies. So, you know, you are a professional deputy and I'm guessing that there are people that you have to answer to, account to show that you're doing your job correctly and, you know, you're discharging your duties as you're supposed to. But you touched on family members there sometimes taking on that role. And again, what oversight is there to make sure that those people are acting in a person's best interests?
So as a deputy, we are appointed by the Court of Protection. So we receive an order, a judge makes an order appointing the person as the deputy to make decisions on that person's behalf. It is a personal appointment in that sense. It is outside of any other role and responsibilities that we have in our lives or our professional lives. You are, in effect, that person in the eyes of the law, and you are accountable to the Court of Protection, ultimately, and you are overseen by the Office of the Public Guardian, or people might have heard, or listeners might have heard, of the OPG. Mm. And the OPG is tasked with supervising deputies and attorneys throughout England and Wales. And on an annual basis, we have to file a report, which is usually around 30 pages worth of information. What decisions have we made? How have we involved the client in that decision-making process? How have we made sure that the client is safe and well in their own home? And we then have to account for every single penny that we have in and every single penny that we spend on behalf of the client. And those reports are sent off to the OPG or the Office of the Public Guardian on an annual basis. And the OPG often comes back and says, well, what did you do this for? Or where has this money gone? And it doesn't balance. If it doesn't balance, God forbid. The Office of the Public Guardian also has the power to remove deputies if they are failing in their duties.
Mm-hmm. So the Office of Public Guardian is a bit like the deputy's deputy.
It is the deputy's deputy. Yeah, it is. And we recently had an assurance visit where they come out and they visit professional deputies like myself, and they will go out and see clients. How is David performing in his role? Do you have enough money to live off every day or every week? Do you have any concerns about David in acting in your role? And they have the power to apply to the Court of Protection to remove that deputy and have someone else appointed.
I think they're more the sheriff than the deputy's deputy. Yeah.
Well, it is reassuring to know that they have somebody looking over them as well.
Yeah, and one of the other things is there's also what we refer to in the industry as a security bond, but effectively it's an insurance policy that all deputies are required to take out. And that insurance policy can be called upon in situations where a deputy has defaulted in their duties and the person has suffered financial loss.
Yeah.
So there is that insurance protection.
Yeah. Does that happen very often?
It does. I've called on the bonds a number of times over the years, not necessarily in the context of professional deputies, but that's not to say that professional deputies don't renege in their duties and clients suffer loss. But moreover, it's lay people, so family members who, and we go back to money is the root of all evil.
Yeah.
People will have the best intentions, but people might think, well, it's my mum and I'm their only child and I'm going to inherit their estate when they die. So actually, I'll pay for my holiday this year out of their money because it's money that I would have otherwise have had when they died. And suddenly the OPG come in and...
Or sometimes it could just be that, you know, it's my mum, but I'm getting all sorts of pressure from other family. And at the end of the day, we are family. Whereas I guess as a professional deputy, you've got that objectivity. You're much more removed. So in some ways, you have less pressures attendant on you than a lay deputy could have. I'm not saying that all lay deputies will have those issues, but I suppose I'd want to know is what support is there for lay deputies so that they can do that job to the best of their abilities in that person's best interests.
The support is the Office of the Public Guardian. So the Office of the Public Guardian is there to not only supervise deputies, but also support them in their role.
Mm-hmm.
Like any government department, though, the Office of the Public Guardian is understaffed, and there are thousands, there are tens of thousands of people acting in the role of either attorney or deputy for people that lack capacity throughout the country. And there are times where that support won't be as freely available because of staffing levels and government budgets, but it's there. But they're not there to give legal advice to lay deputies or professional deputies. They're there to support them. And ultimately, it goes back to the Court of Protection if it becomes a legal issue.
Yeah.
So there is support available, but I think if I say to anybody who's looking to take on the role of a deputy or an attorney, whether it's in a lay context or a professional context, we've all got our life admin to deal with.
Yeah.
Like Brooks says, he'll get the letter, he'll put it on the side, and because of Brooks' brain injury, he will forget about it, or he'll not deal with it because he's dealing with something else that's come up and he struggles to multitask. But we all have that problem in our life admin. That's the role that we're doing for other people. So what I would say is you really need to sort of understand the responsibility and the level of responsibility that's placed on you as a deputy or an attorney. You've not only got to sort your own life admin out, but you've got to sort other people's life admin out.
Be very organised.
You've got to get their tax returns done just as much as you might need to get your own tax returns done. You've got to pay their bills as much as you've got to pay your own bills. And unlike what we do in our own lives, you've got to account to the Office of the Public Guardian for every single penny, every decision that you make.
Yeah.
So it isn't something that you should enter into lightly.
No.
And I often talk to family members who want to be deputy for their family member. And I often say to them, look, you need to understand that there is a level of responsibility over and above what you want to do for your parent or your sibling or whoever it might be. And don't go into this purely from a sense of, I have to do this because that's my dad, or I have to do this because it's my mum.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go into it with your eyes open.
Yeah.
And there are people like me that do the role in a professional context. And if you feel that you can't do that role or you can't fulfill that role, don't feel guilty that you are passing it to someone else, because the pressures that will come on you will come on you. And there, as I say, it's a court appointment. You will go back to court if you fail. You will be investigated by the Office of the Public Guardian if you start to do things that raise red flags in front of the Office of the Public Guardian. I've had a number of instances over the years where there's police involvement. There's social services involvement from a safeguarding perspective, and attorneys and deputies have been removed because they've not done what they were supposed to do. 9 times out of 10, I think they genuinely did it for the right reasons. 1 in 10, it's a police matter, and it's something, it's actually theft.
Yeah, and it's sad, but it happens.
But even the most genuine of reasons, in the eyes of the law, we go back to what we're talking about today. It's the Court of Protection. It is there and exists to protect those that aren't able to make decisions for themselves. So the most genuine of reasons can still fall foul of the law.
We often get questions from people inquiring, clients, etc., about potentially changing deputies. You know, what can I spend my money on? How much is it going to cost? And I think cost is actually something I wanted to pick up on, because you spoke before about, you know, you as a professional deputy, you're being paid by your clients from their monies, and you have to pick your battles in terms of which decisions you're going to push or not. But just for our listeners, and thinking both from the context of a lay deputy as well as a professional deputy, what are the kind of costs that somebody might face? You've mentioned a security bond, for example. So, you know, can you give us some idea of like some specific items?
I mean, there's fees that have to be paid. So when you first apply to the Court of Protection, you have to pay an application fee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it changes each year, but it's around £350 to £400 per application that you make. When you get appointed as a deputy, you have to pay £100 to have your name added to the register of deputies for the Office of the Public Guardian. There's the security bond or the insurance policy that we talked on. That's paid annually over 5 years. And that can vary depending on how much money is actually being managed by the deputy. So if it's a smaller amount of money being managed, then that insurance premium will be lower.
Yeah.
If it's a multi-million pound compensation claim, then that insurance premium is going to be higher. Okay. There's also a supervision fee payable to the Office of the Public Guardian, which is paid annually. There are remissions or reliefs that you can get if you're in receipt of certain benefits. But generally speaking, it's £300 for the Office of the Public Guardian fee, again, year on year.
The remission, is that if it's the deputy that's in receipt of benefits or if it's the person who's finances are being managed?
It's the person's finances that are being managed. So if that particular client is in receipt of housing benefit or universal credit because they can no longer work, then that may qualify for a remission of the supervision fee.
Okay.
In terms of professional deputies charging, we're all bound by the Office of the Public Guardian and Senior Court Costs Office guidance as to what we can charge and how we charge. All deputies charge in accordance with the guideline hourly rates, depending on the location. And that is effectively a four-tier charge out rate for deputies and solicitors who are more than 7 years qualified at grade A, then grade B, grade C, and then grade D. And as you go down, grade D being a non-qualified, potentially an accounts assistant in a professional context or an administrator. And it's not for me in my role to look at a gas bill and charge grade A rate for looking at the gas bill and paying the gas bill.
Yeah.
I've got a duty as a professional deputy to delegate my responsibilities to a more appropriate level of, we use the word fee earner in the industry, but someone else more appropriate and paid an hourly rate more appropriate to the task.
Yeah, we don't take a sledgehammer to crack a nut.
Exactly. So we're all obliged to charge the same hourly rates depending on our location. And every year as a professional, we have to send our costs and our files to the Senior Courts Costs Office for those files to be assessed.
Okay.
So if I were to say that it had cost £10,000 in a year to manage someone's property and finances, that would go to the Senior Courts Costs Office. And if they came back and said it was £8,000, then I'm only allowed to charge £8,000. So there's that added layer of oversight on the fees that we as professional deputies take.
I guess that's of some reassurance then to people who are potentially facing having to have a deputy under the Court of Protection, knowing that they've got the OPG, the Office of the Public Guardian, who are supervising the deputies to make sure that they're doing their jobs properly. But also in the case of professional deputies, that you've got the SCCO looking at the costs that they're charging and making sure that those charges are appropriate and not overinflated.
Yeah, and I think one thing to add in the context of a compensation claim, and you know this far better than I do, Ashi, the costs of a professional deputy can be claimed as a separate head of loss within the compensation claim itself. Yeah. So if the evidence is that a client needs a professional deputy for 10 years and that is likely to cost £10,000 per year, then in theory, there will be £100,000 recovered within their compensation claim to pay for the likes of someone like me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm free to charge £10,000 a year and take the £100,000 over the 10 years. If it works out that it's £5,000 a year for 10 years, then there's £50,000 in that compensation claim that can go on something else.
Mm-hmm.
But conversely, if there's not enough money, then we're then starting to eat into other areas of the compensation claim itself. So again, it's a balance, but ultimately the professional deputy is the one that manages that compensation claim.
Yeah.
And they will be looking at not only their own costs and how they were calculated within the claim context, but the costs of maybe a case manager or a dietitian or a physio going forwards. And it's always about sort of looking at what was claimed, what's being spent. Can we carry on spending that amount of money? Do we need to spend more? It's just looking at it as a whole.
Sometimes I think as well, we know that it's somebody perhaps has capacity, but does need additional help or might find certain large financial transactions difficult to deal with. And we've come across situations where, certainly in a litigation context, where we've got experts suggesting that a person has a professional trustee. Can you talk to us just generally about what a professional trustee does, a personal injury trust? And I should just specify here that this is only in relation to people that do have compensation claims. These aren't mechanisms that exist generally. But how a professional trustee's role might differ to a professional deputy's role, what a personal injury trust is as well?
Okay. So a personal injury trust is effectively a legal mechanism that entitles someone who is in receipt of compensation whilst also being in receipt of means-tested benefits or statutory funding, preserving their entitlement to both. 9 times out of 10, it applies to someone with capacity and smaller amounts of compensation, but amounts of compensation that would be in excess of the current capital thresholds for means testing. And if they weren't to place that compensation into a trust, then they would lose their entitlement to benefits. The trust itself is a legal document. It effectively gives control of the compensation from the person receiving it to at least 2 people. And more often than not, that is the client and their spouse or partner or family member. And that control is then passed to the trustees, and the trustees make decisions in relation to the compensation within the trust fund and release money in the beneficiary's best interest. Mm-hmm. It's not governed by a separate tax regime. It's like having money in a joint account where you both need to sign for it. Mm. So that's effectively what a PI trust is. It's a way of preserving entitlement to benefits, but you do give away sole control of the money that you receive. Yeah.
It's a legal cake, having your cake and eat it.
It is having your cake and eat it. In the context of a professional trustee, we talked before about no client being the same and capacity being 50 shades of grey. And in the role of a deputy, you can be micromanaging someone's financial affairs where they've completely lack all decision-making capacity, all the way through to the other end of the spectrum where you are effectively just making bigger decisions. So what I often say to clients is a deputy can be the full orchestra and the conductor, depending on the client's individual capacity. So I may be playing second fiddle for those that can't make decisions for themselves. For those that are more able to make most decisions for themselves, I'm in that conductor role. As a professional trustee, you should only be within the professional conductor role. Ultimately, the client has capacity to make those decisions for themselves. They should be dealing with their own bills, their own financial affairs. But in that role as professional trustee, you are assisting in the bigger decisions that need to be made. So you are effectively conducting the orchestra.
That's a really good analogy. I guess as a co-trustee, you might be a page turner almost, you know, not even conducting the orchestra. It's it's just an additional safeguard because a trust requires more than one trustee.
Yeah, it goes back to what we said before. It's the Blame Canada situation.
Yeah, true.
If you have a professional trustee and people are putting pressure on you, or there are pressures to spend money in places that you don't want to spend it, there is someone else that is there to question that decision and make you stop and think. I suppose it's a sounding board. I've got an idea. I think I might want to do this. Okay, well, let's talk about it. Let's see whether it's a good idea. Ultimately, though, the one thing I will say is PI trusts are not a panacea, and the appointment of a professional trustee is not a panacea to someone who has or struggles with decision making. Within the trust deed itself, the beneficiary has the right to remove their trustees and appoint new trustees whenever they want to. So it's certainly in the legal context, having a professional trustee does not avoid people being taken advantage of, because if that person still has capacity, they can remove the professional trustee if they disagree with them and appoint someone who agrees with them.
And I'm guessing because that person has capacity, there isn't the same requirement for oversight in the same way that you would have for a deputyship.
No, there's very minimal oversight. I mean, professional trustees or trustees in general have fiduciary duties, or sort of not set out in law, but general duties that they have to adhere to. And they're governed by the Trustee Act, and there's certain things that they have to do. They're not allowed to put their own interests first. They've got to take appropriate financial advice in terms of the trust management, but there isn't that separate government body that's providing oversight. There isn't an insurance policy backing it up. So again, for the listeners, if you are going to have a personal injury trust, choose your trustees wisely.
And make sure you trust them.
I'm conscious, actually, that one of the questions that you asked me was, how do we change deputy? And I think we got distracted on fees. And importantly so, that we are, as professionals, charging fees. So it's important that the listeners know that those fees are paid, but there is an element of oversight. But ultimately, if you aren't happy with your deputy, then the first route for all clients that I talk to who might approach me and say that they would like a different deputy being appointed, whether that's a family member or me in my role or someone who doesn't want to work with me anymore, the first route is to have a conversation with your deputy. Try and iron out the issues that you have. Try and meet with an amicable resolution. So talk to them. Get them to understand your point of view. Allow them the opportunity to explain their point of view. It may well be that there's a lack of information or a lack of understanding or a misunderstanding that's occurred as to what the deputy can and can't do, mm-hmm. or what it is that the family want the deputy to do. So the first route is to at least have a conversation, because if it is a professional deputy, that is going to cost the less or yes. the least amount of money. Having a conversation, working through the issues will be the cheapest option that you have. You then have an option to go to the Office of the Public Guardian and ask them to conduct an investigation. And the Office of the Public Guardian would ordinarily, in the first instance, write out to the deputy and say, we've had concerns raised by whoever it is, and please can you answer these? Mm-hmm. Now, I personally don't hold great faith in the Office of the Public Guardian writing to professional deputies raising those concerns, because ultimately, if I was asked, why have you done X, Y, and Z, I would go back and I would say, I've done them because of X, Y, and Z reasons. Mm-hmm. And there's no three-way conversation going on. Mm. It's literally, these are the allegations that have been made against you. And what I've seen in practice is deputies will go back and say, yes, we've taken all steps that we needed to take. We've talked to the family. It's wrong that they say that we haven't talked to them, or we've done all of these things. And ultimately, you're left without a resolution. So the Office of the Public Guardian is there to investigate, but ultimately it doesn't prove to resolve the issues, in my experience. It's far better to have that conversation with your deputy yourself and know that you're asking the questions and you're hearing what they have to say to you, not through a third party. Ultimately, you can change a deputy by applying to the Court of Protection, but the only way that a deputy can be changed is through a court order and an application to the court. So it goes back to the reason why I said speak to the deputy first.
Yeah, and presumably with the application you'd need to set out specific reasons as to why you are seeking that change in appointment and that it is the right thing to do, or to try and persuade the court it's the right thing to do.
Yes, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Every decision that a deputy makes or the Court of Protection makes has to be in the person's best interest. Mm-hmm. And a change of deputy has to be justified through the court process as being in that person's best interest. So you have to demonstrate through usually a supporting witness statement within the proceedings all the reasons why it's in that person's best interest to have a new deputy appointed.
Yeah.
It does happen where the deputy refuses to step down, and you can end up before a judge in court giving evidence as to why that person should be removed as deputy. I always try to to resolve the issues or ask the clients to look to resolve the issues or speak to the deputy themselves to say, look, this isn't going to serve anyone's purpose by going to court, arguing over whether you're to blame or whether they're to blame. Ultimately, if there has been a breakdown in the relationship, it's in everyone's interest for that to start again and for a new deputy to be appointed. But it can and does result in court proceedings where the deputy won't let go because they feel they've not done anything wrong.
Mm.
And I've had a number of experiences over the years where I've sought to agree a transfer of deputyship, and ultimately they've said no, we're not doing that. And I've then looked at what's in the client's best interest and decided that actually I'm not going to go to court over what might just be sort of a falling out or a disagreement over a certain thing. It's got to be, when you are talking about, I mean, an application to the Court of Protection could cost you a couple of £1,000 plus VAT. If you are talking going to attended court hearings, you are in the tens of thousands of pounds on both sides. Again, don't think that you can just change your deputy without incurring cost. And the other thing to think about is the costs that are associated in the transfer after a new deputy has been appointed.
Yeah, because they'll have to review everything.
They have to take over all the bank accounts. They have to renew all the direct debits. They have to write to the local authority for your council tax. They have to write to the car,
DWP,
to the tax, to get your car tax, your benefits. So there's a cost incurred in actually transferring the management of that person's affairs. So again, if you can resolve those issues with the deputy that you have at the time, you will save money going forwards.
But I guess it's also not to say that, you know, if there is a problem, you should avoid addressing it because it's going to be a costly process, because sometimes it is the right thing to do. Have you ever come across situations where there have been almost vexatious applications by family members who've wanted to get rid of you as a professional deputy, not necessarily with any sort of foundation, just simply that they wanted to get rid of you?
Personally, I have never stepped in the way of a client wanting to change their deputy from me. And that's because it is a personal appointment to me. Not only in the context of it being my name on the order, but also I live and breathe my clients' financial affairs. I know their pets' names. I know what's wrong with their houses, having read through the survey reports. I know how long it's going to be before their money runs out. I know when their tax deadline is. The role of a deputy is so involved in a person's life. It is about the relationship that you can build with that person over the time. And if that relationship breaks down, then that's just going to make what is already a difficult job much harder. So I've never stood in the way of anyone who says I can't work with you anymore, because if I'm going to argue with them, or we're going to argue over decisions that I'm making, believing those to be in the person's best interest, it's only going to add to the costs. And if they have someone, or if they've found someone that they feel that they can work with better, then so be it. Similarly, though, conversely, I should say, I have come across people who, and there is a phrase in the industry, deputy shopping, and there are people who will have a deputy, they won't get what they want, or the family invariably won't get what they want, and they change deputies. And then another couple of years goes by and they find somebody else. And quite recently, I've come across a situation whereby the Court of Protection has refused the appointment of a replacement deputy for a period of 5 years, because ultimately it is a court authorised appointment. The court doesn't appoint the deputy lightly, and it's not for the deputy or the family or the client to just say, I've had enough, we're going to go somewhere else.
Where would you go? Deputy shopping.
To the deputy supermarket.
That's what I was thinking.
There's lots of us out there. There are thousands of professional deputies out there, Brooke.
I'm thinking of changing.
We all have different reasons and motivations for why we do the job that we do. We all have different levels of experience. We all have no two deputies are the same, just as no two clients are the same. And throughout my career, I've looked at clients and thought, I'm probably not the best fit for you, or someone else might be a good fit for you, in terms of, as I've worked through my career as a solicitor and sort of moving up the ranks, you and I clash. So let's look at someone else that might work better with you, because ultimately we're doing it for a reason, and there is a lot of responsibility on our shoulders. So if I'm not right, there are other deputies out there that might be right for you. What I will say, and of course I'm going to say this, is the grass isn't always greener.
What was originally pitched to me in a brain injury friendly way, that the reason you need a deputy is so you don't make some stupid decisions such as going to buy a bright green Lamborghini, which might be cool on the first day, but, you know, 6 months later you realise it's a massively depreciating asset.
Especially if you can't drive.
Especially if you can't drive, yeah. That would be an issue. But have you ever had any mad requests like that?
I've had lots of weird and wonderful requests.
I imagine. Years.
I say weird and wonderful when I started the whole sort of podcast today with saying that every client's different and it's not for me to live my life through them. And the reason I'm saying weird and wonderful is because it's not something that I'd personally buy, but I've had a request for a few £1,000 for a blue velvet sequin tuxedo.
Lovely.
Which I thought was, and this was someone who was in a residential rehab setting and wasn't going to go anywhere, unfortunately, that required a blue sequined velvet.
There's an element of sadness to that, though, isn't there?
There is, yeah. There is. And ultimately, every request that I get, be it weird and wonderful or mundane, invariably it's not the client. It's the client's brain injury that's right. making the request. I've gone by many different names over the years. I've gone by Money Man, Deputy Dave, Money Bags, Bank Manager, Accountant, names I won't repeat on the podcast that aren't as nice. But ultimately, it's the brain injury or it's the illness that's talking to me. People have sworn at me. People have threatened to come and stab me if I don't give them their money. I've been to strange ways. I've been to different prisons throughout the years to see clients. It's not them. I've had conversations with parents who have been upset because their son or their daughter's spoken to me in a certain way. It's not their daughter or their son. It's the brain injury or the illness that they have that's making them speak in that way. And I do take it personally at times, but I don't take it personally to them. It's not that person. It's not the person they were. But I have to appreciate and understand that it's the person that they are today. Mm-hmm. So the question was, so blue velvet, sequined tuxedo. I've had numerous requests for plastic surgery over the years. That's quite common. Flash cars,
yeah,
like you say, Lamborghini, that's usually one. Bigger houses than they really need. But I mean, ultimately, going back to what we said, each client has their own lives, each client lives their own lives. Yeah. Whatever their passions are, they will invariably come to me to ask me to fund whatever passion it is that they have.
And it's not for you to impose any judgment on that.
No.
It's, yeah. Maybe the guy was going to an Austin Powers themed event in his home. Who knows?
I think in that particular circumstance, it was very much, and I don't know whether I'm using the right word, but psychosomatic. The idea of spending his money and that was what he wanted would make him feel better and some control over what he was spending. So, there's been lots and lots of things. Like I say, the flowers for Grandma's grave on three occasions throughout the year will always stick in my memory. I've been involved in money laundering investigations where clients have been taken advantage of, and that's becoming more and more apparent in the world we live in now with Instagram and social media. People are making friends in inverted commas online, and my clients are giving away their bank details, and suddenly we've got the police involved.
Have you had any requests to invest in Bitcoin yet?
I have. And it's something that has formed part of portfolios of investments previously.
Oh, wow.
Not any longer. But when it comes to investment, actually, it's don't have all your eggs in one basket.
No, of course
not. So you will have stocks and shares and gilts and bonds and all the rest of it. And you might have some Bitcoin. You might have some property. You might have some car park spaces. But it's about having a mixed bag.
Great. Well, thank you, David. I think that's been really, really helpful. I'm sure our listeners will find it fascinating. And I'm hoping as well that it will have dispelled some common myths, preconceptions about what the role of a deputy is, and the fact that you're not there to prevent people from accessing the money. If anything, you're there to help them, to empower them, to make decisions for themselves so that they can regain some control, particularly after often a very traumatic and life-changing event. So once again, thank you very much, David, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Please don't forget to follow, subscribe and share our content. If you do have any suggestions for topics that you'd like us to cover, why not drop us a line at hi@braininjurybites.co.uk.